Okay, so many of you familiar with the costs of ISPs are aware of this very large markup that happens in the last couple of hops to any particular person's house in the process of routing traffic. Your ISP gets a pretty big markup over what they're paying to their ISP, and the higher you go, the cheaper it gets. And the actual geographic distance of the last couple hops of these is really not very large at all. So it seems to make good economic sense for people to just connect to each other via wireless and route through each other and connect pretty much directly to the main backbone over a couple of wireless hops through peers. Our next group of people are working on actually making this happen. It's very technically difficult, despite being very economically straightforward. So this is the WikiWikiWAN, and our presenters are Jonathan Moore and Jeremy Avnet, who can come up here as well. Here, I'll show you that. I'll show that to one of you while the other one talks.
Okay, well, I kind of wanted to show you some stuff that may or may not work with this VGA projector. I guess the first thing that comes out is doing this right now. Unfortunately, the hard bit isn't really the software. It turns out just getting any of the hardware you can get to work and getting antennas and all that kind of stuff going and figuring out getting even drivers that run correctly is actually fairly problematic right now. So, unfortunately, a lot of the work that I've done on this is not anything that I can really show you, look, here's some neat little thing, because it's just the fact that it actually somewhat works that's interesting. So this really started off not quite as Bram said. I agree completely with his statements about the last mile. You need the little connector. Yeah, here, so this goes. Not the last mile problem, although it's a really interesting problem. It's actually more that a few years ago, I just kept on noticing almost every time some interesting person got squashed by some big company, not necessarily because what they were doing is clearly illegal, but because it was irritating them. The way they squashed them was not necessarily by going to them directly, but by going to their ISP upstream, or alternately the domain name system, upstream at the internet or whatever, and making them stop. So I thought about it, and I thought, wouldn't it be neat if we could build a network where there was no hierarchy to the IP space, where you didn't really have the strong concept of your upstream provider who was routed your address, the block that your address was in, and who is ultimately responsible for your packets. The internet's not completely arranged that way. Of course, at the core level, if you're an AS, you talk BGP, and OSPF and all that stuff, and things kind of work themselves out, but that's always been sort of this something that's limited to people who have a lot of bandwidth. And so, for the most part, it's not really peer-to-peer decisions of whether I want to talk to you. It's really there's one person or a chain of people sitting in between us, any one of which can stop me from talking to you. So the answer to this, I looked on a little on the internet, and the general technology that sort of answers this problem is referred to as mobile ad hoc networks, or MANETs. So I decided I wanted to build one of those, and I dawdled for a while, not writing my own software to do it. I designed stuff in my head and didn't write anything. Bought some hardware and started playing with it. And then I was lucky enough, actually, to find that some guy at a company whose unfortunately name I can't remember, I really should know, I guess. Meter?
M-I-T-R-E.
MITRE, or what a guy? MITRE. Decided that he was tired of hearing people talk about whether or not mobile ad hoc networks would work. And so he wrote some software that would do them. So I've tried to take as much stuff off the shelf to put this together as I can. The software he wrote is actually a little bit inadequate, so I've modified it a bit and will continue to do so, and using it sort of as a platform for development. But what I've got, does this actually work? Oh, it is. Oh, excellent. What I've got right now, what you can see, this is actually a network that's running right now in the building. Can you zoom it out at all, just so we can see the whole thing? Okay, well, there's the whole thing. Let's zoom it back in again so you can see. What this is showing is each of the boxes is a host that's running. There's four hosts. The arrows represent unidirectional links, and the numbers above the arrows are the metrics. In the original mobile mesh implementation, all you had was a fixed metric that basically was supposed to be varied with, you know, how much bandwidth, or whatever you thought the cost of that link was. But it turns out, if you think about it even just for a minute, that a fixed metric is a really, really poor thing in a wireless network, and especially in one of these mobile networks where you can have interesting, you know, mesh kind of topologies. I mean, the software's even called mobile mesh. So the two things, obviously, that are interesting is, one is, you know, if there's heavy utilization at one part of the network, you'd like to not use that bit of the network and use another route if it's available to you. The other thing, too, is since generally these are, you know, they're mobile networks implemented wirelessly, the reality of wireless is that there's often a lot of packet loss. And, you know, when you start building these networks, you start to feel like 20% packet loss is really pretty okay. I mean, you know, it's not what you want, but, you know, until you're getting, you know, it's not something that you think is absolutely horrific, and you're willing to use that link. Those are two good reasons. So you really want to be able to figure out packet loss and figure out utilization at points. And so I've got a reasonable thing for doing packet loss, and honestly something I just finished hacking together last night to do utilization, which is not really tuned at all and not very configurable. But the other thing is actually turns out, which really got me started working on the code instead of just the administration stuff building the system, was that it turns out what you need to do is find your neighbors is the first thing you need to do. And if you to know your neighbors, the way that mobile mesh does it and the way that seems generally reasonable is you have basically a border discovery protocol where you send out some broadcast packets, which are, in this case, UDP packets, to a well-known port, and everybody else listens for them. And if you hear a packet from somebody, you know that you have a unidirectional link coming into you, and they can send packets to you, and you can add that into your link state of the network for calculating your routes. The problem is, if you want a dynamic network, you want to have a fairly short time between not seeing a packet and deciding that the link has gone down. Because if there's nodes moving around the network, you don't want to assume there's a link there if the other end of the link has moved and is out of range from you, or weather conditions, or, you know, vehicles or moving trees have moved in the way of your link and you no longer have the link. So with a fixed metric for link cost, you really only ever have up or down. And when you start thinking about the fact that you have 20% packet loss, it actually becomes fairly easy to miss a series of hello messages. So that if you set your link drop time short enough to be fairly dynamic, it's not that the link really went down, you just happened to get unlucky on a number of packets, and you drop that link, and all of a sudden now you're not utilizing a link at all that you could otherwise utilize, and especially bad if it's your only link at this time, and you don't have multiple routes to the network. So it's much better to instead estimate packet loss and just raise the cost of that link instead of just dropping it quickly. And that way you can have a very dynamic network which even more quickly starts to raise the cost of links when the packet loss occurs, but also can leave that link around for a long time. Even if it hasn't seen a packet from that thing for 2 minutes and you expect one every second, it's okay to keep it there because you can just set the cost arbitrarily high, and so you'll only use that link if you have no other choice to route packets to the network. And if you can't get there and it's really down, well, you've lost anyway. So that's the basic of what's there. It's implemented. It's implemented with mobile mesh and 802.11b right now, which has its pluses and minuses. Its pluses are that it's pretty fast, and even with a multi-hop link, it's not unreasonable to figure you're getting a megabit of throughput on it, and you could really get a bit more than that. Like, realistically, a point-to-point link with it is going to be like 4 megabits in good conditions, but then if you remember you're doing multi-hop and it's a half duplex thing since it's a radio, you've got to cut that in half. So you're, you know, if you're lucky, you're getting 2 megabits through it. But you know, a megabit is really not all that bad. I mean, I guess if we all asked ourselves, would a megabit be a decent connection? You know, 10 years ago before DSL was out, I think we would all, you know, think that was a stupid question. So I think we've been a little bit spoiled by modern broadband, which is only available to some of us. So that's the network. You can see the things. We could bring down another computer, and we can show that the thing would come down. The other thing I wanted to show you is actually, I can't see my computer. Here, I can just do it. Alt 6. Did it do anything? Okay. Do we have to switch off of here? Somebody set my computer up, and I don't know how it's working. This seems to me. Okay, there we go. Okay, so this network is actually the network that I'm running in Santa Cruz. You want to zoom out for just a second so you can see sort of what it looks like in a bigger picture. You can see, so there's a lot of lines. There's actually a lot of mesh topology in it already. This network has actually been used since maybe even as early as September or earlier for some people's full-time internet connectivity where they were actually, one of them was somewhere where they couldn't get DSL, somebody else was just interested in it. And just, you know, after getting started playing with me, you know, kicked their DSL because they didn't like Pac Bell like everybody else. So that sort of shows you the sort of a real world network that's being used. Can you zoom back in again? So you can see that the thing at the top boxes show you external routes. So we can announce external routes with it. So several of the nodes in the network are configured to announce /29s as external routes and then do DHCP on them so that other mobile nodes can connect to it. And actually, one of the computers in the network we're running right here is, if any of you have wireless cards right now, if you put it in IBSS mode and used the ESSID FreeWAN, you should be able to DHCP and get an address and ping any of the computers on this network. FreeWAN, that's just sort of got set a long time ago. That's what I've still been using. Let's see. Is there anything else interesting I should tell you before you ask me questions? I have thought a lot through how you would do this in a very sort of cypherpunk kind of way where you don't trust any of the hosts. And the other big problem that I spent, the other problem I spent a while thinking about, which is also interesting, is so right now it's great because anybody who installed this software could, you know, on their computer and got a radio would just have to get in range of one other radio and all of a sudden they're on the network and can talk to every other network. Except, of course, for the problem of we kind of all have to agree on who's what IP address. So the answer, my answer to that is two things. One is just, well, go to IPv6. That way we have a lot more flexibility. The second answer is the way you actually calculate an IP address when you come up on the network. So the first thing you do is you come up on the network and you ask one of your neighbors for the local topology. And you use that to decide what the network, quote unquote network address you have currently is. You don't have to do this, but this will actually help for some future improvements in routing. So let me go through, describe it, and then through those improvements in routing. So you come up and you get, and basically you get a network address by taking the average of the network address of all the hosts within one or two hops of you and deciding that's your network average, your network address, and if somebody else is using the same network address, increment it by 1 bit, so up the lower order bit by 1 and keep doing that till you have a unique one. Then all your lower order bits, the idea is they would actually be a hash of your public key and all the hosts in the network should be doing IPsec or some other kind of point-to-point encryption, end-to-end encryption. And the neat thing is if your lower order bits, your hash, your public key, you have something that's, you know, pretty random. And if you use enough bits in the lower order, like say 64, it becomes actually fairly difficult to spoof somebody's address and poison the routing tables because This is making the guarantee that the those bits are the same as your public key. So any host can check that you're actually encrypting your packets with something that makes sense based on your IP address, and makes it fairly hard to do it. It means, of course, doable, but if somebody spends a few hours and comes up with, a collision on that for you, you can, only a few minutes change your address again, and it takes them another few hours. It's kind of irritating, but, we're always going to live with denial of service attacks, especially in the wireless area. I mean, when it comes down to it, I could go to the hardware store, buy myself a car battery and a cheap DC motor and make a really noisy radio device in just a few minutes that is really going to screw over the wireless network. What you really want to try to do when I say that, that's kind of a stupid thing to say, because obviously what you're trying to prevent is denial of service attacks that are not local link based but across the network, which this kind of route poisoning kind of can be. So it's a hope to improvement. The other thing you might be thinking too is that you may not have sort of realized the way it's doing it, but it really is basically you have static routes to everything in here, and you're actually doing a full open shortest path calculation for every host in the network. It's you configurable time period. I'm using whatever the original default was, with it's 4 seconds, and I haven't had any reason to play with that yet. But you can see as the network grows, that could become expensive, especially for devices with less power. So you'd really like to do some route aggregation in the network. And so the way to do that is if you take the scheme of picking your network a bits by being ones that are essentially local to where you are, you can then use the algorithm. I'm not 100% sure this works. I haven't actually proven it to myself, but I'm fairly confident that if you can see 51% of a network space within a reasonably short number of hops, you can just stop announcing all of the hosts in that network space and just announce a network route. And so by picking your address in this way that keeps locality, you should actually have naturally a fairly hierarchical network that allow you to do that kind of thing. I think that's everything I really want to say to work. I mean, this hardly anybody uses this ad hoc mode, so all the cars and drivers are pretty flaky. I just discovered last night, of course, some bug that I have to trace down where it looks like I'm getting network splits sometimes due to people changing their mind about what channel they're on, and then there being arguments in the network about what channel the network's on. Because of some other problems I had a bad time yesterday trying to get this all together, and things breaking, of course, at the last minute. So I don't actually have stuff online for people yet, but I'll get that online next week, and you can get all the stuff. So I have a nice set of init scripts so that you can pull cards in and out, and it configures everything dynamically from the host side. But I think that's pretty much that's a good amount for me to talk without you saying anything, so I'll shut up now until you ask me something. I think you need this microphone down there, don't you? I should use this one? This is like the mobile microphone, so people won't ask questions? What? You can't get anywhere, so just IP addresses. It's not hooked in. Did you have a question over there? How do I deal with the hidden known problem in which version of the hidden known problem you're talking about?
I can see part of the other machines in my network, but they may or may not be able to see me.
Because the way this is, it's all done with. It's all done with unidirectional. It's all done with unidirectional links. You consider a link to be not that you have a link to somebody when you hear a packet from them. You consider they have a link to you when you hear a packet from them. So the way the software really works is the link discovery is only one part. It's also got a router protocol where once you know you have a link. So okay, you also send all of your neighbors when you send a link discovery packet, so you know who you have links to as well. And even if you don't do that, as long as you know at least one way through the network already, you actually pass your link state table to all of your neighbors, and they propagate it on to everybody else, which actually with mobile mesh is done, can be configured to be done with a exponentially increasing time delay so that you don't have exponentially increasing chat traffic on the network, so that you can match the amount, as often as you forward the link state to match the exponential increase in the amount of link state traffic that would exist. And that's a reasonable thing to do, because the further you are away from somewhere in the network, the less accurate information you need about that network. So it's okay if it's a little bit out of date, since if it's changing anyway, it may be different from the time you send the packet to when it gets there. Does that answer your question? You have another?
I'm asking, are you forwarding link layer MAC address information for the, to build people's ARP tables in addition to IP level information?
Do I send?
Because if I broadcast and you can see, aha, I see that IP address over there, and you're going to have briefly my MAC address, which normally you would, your ARP cache would drop after I go away for a little while. I'm wondering, when you're updating the state table, are you broadcasting intent and caching the MAC
layer? No, I'm actually not doing that now, and I actually haven't. I've not tried to use unidirectional links. I've actually got it all configured for bidirectional links right now. I've played with the software enough to see it work, but with unidirectional links, but the, you know, I haven't tried it long enough to deal with things like that ARP stuff. I mean, that would probably, you, seems like something I'd have to solve to do that, to really utilize the unidirectional links.
Is that the thing about 802.11 ad hoc?
No, what ad hoc is it's just a mode that the cards can run on. And so it's really just, that's just a network layer thing, so that the cards can talk to each other and know a little bit about each other. It's opposed to managed mode, which is what all these APs do. So the difference is, in managed mode, when you want to send a packet to another wireless device, you send it to the AP, and the AP sends it to the other wireless device. So it's all through a central thing. So you've essentially got, you know, a star network topology. With ad hoc mode, when you want to send something to somebody, you send it to them directly. And so all it really does, I mean, you could use like ad hoc mode. You could try and use ad hoc mode and 802.1q bridging and try and build a huge bridge network. But even then, it's not as useful, because to make that easy for them, they even do spanning trees, so you don't get to use multiple routes. You just have a single one. So it's really, the thing is deciding the least cost route through a mesh network that's there. Otherwise, it's just MAC layer, and you only get to say, you know, see your next host. Yeah, but it's, you know, it's network layer stuff. So unless you can talk to somebody directly, you can't talk to them. It does actually bring out some interesting features that a lot of TCP stacks have this assumption that all networks are buses, so that if you can see one host on a network, you can if you can see two hosts on a network, they can see each other. And this is actually encoded into some of the things. If you, the standard for sending like ICMP redirects is, if you get a packet in and you send it back out through the same interface, send an ICMP redirect because of this sort of assumption. And so you'll see, like, with some of the kernels I've used, some of the configurations, generates tons of ICMP redirects because I didn't bother blocking them, because it was, you know, it was following the rules and saying, oh, well, I'll send an ICMP redirect, but the actual topology is that the node that's getting the packet is in between the other two nodes, and they can't see each other directly. That was sort of an answer to your question. Any other questions? It's over there. Turn.
You mentioned that you dynamically configure link costs or metrics based mm-hmm. on packet loss and congestion.
Yeah.
How is that dynamically reduced? Let's say packet loss falls again or congestion eases. How do those?
Okay. Well. Okay. Drop? So the you know, I'm using, you know, this mobile mesh as a development platform, because there's a bunch of code written and it works, and it's a, you know, after working with it, it's a little quirky but like fairly well engineered code. It's all in C++, which I'm actually learning as I write it. But you know, my housemate is a really good C++ programmer, so that helps me a lot. There is only a single metric, because what it ends up doing is updating the routing tables. It's not actually a full-fledged routing daemon the way it's implemented. It's something I definitely want to go to so I can do more interesting things. But it basically just at a period you set, updates your kernel's routing tables. And most kernels routing tables, this is all running on Linux right now, Linux included, have a single metric for cost. So you have no choice but to come down to one number. And so basically the algorithm I use is you can set a base metric for the interface, and you take the base metric and you add it to the quantity packet loss, which is a percentage, so an integral from 0 to 100, times a slope which you configure, so that you can control. So it's so it's linear, which is important, so that you can make it additive across the network and make reasonable assumptions. But you can choose what the linear slope is. It's kind of important that all the hosts pick the same one for it to really work robustly, but it works if you don't. Actually, in this network, there's actually more than one version of the software. Not all of it supports these features and stuff, just because it's kind of interesting that it does work. We can make changes to how the stuff works and add significant new features with still allowing old hosts to, not necessarily work as well as they could, but manage along. The other thing is, so it takes the base, it adds that sum, that value to it, and then it also adds in a similarly calculated value that's based on the bytes per second that's going through the interface multiplied by another slope. Right now, I haven't played with that at all or come up with the reasonable values, and the slope that's in there is not even configurable. I compiled it in just because I would, this was kind of last minute to make that actually work. Any other questions? Oh, someone over there. He was closer.
I've got the microphone, right. I had two questions. One sort of has to do with the CVS tree and mobile mesh and whether you're thinking of this whole thing as forking off completely or whether is there any reason why mobile mesh wouldn't be improved by all the things you've done?
No, I don't think so at all. I actually, if you're on the mobile mesh developers list, I forwarded, they weren't actually patches because I was lazy. But it wasn't that big. I forwarded the source code that you need to use the version that does packet loss. I haven't done the newer version because it's not really quite that does rate bandwidth monitoring stuff. But no, I've been trying to contribute to it. There is no open CVS tree for mobile mesh as far as I know. My actual thought sort of was that I was going to try and play with this ARC server thing that looked kind of interesting that I read about recently, which does a more distributed CV and just put up a mobile mesh tree there, and then anybody could play on it and get stuff out of it.
Okay. Good, because it doesn't seem like you're going in any different direction, just improving it.
I like to do things iteratively, so I like to work on things iteratively until they get to the point where they're too hackish and I have to re-implement. And so for a while, it will be, it will definitely be a mobile mesh, branch. I may at some point, stop and re-implement something from scratch, which by then doesn't look much like the original mobile mesh. But, I'm trying to keep the changes in mobile mesh that are useful. And, they may show up there. You have to deal with the guy who owns the code.
Right. My other question was, to what extent have you been able to test scaling of this? How many machines, points have you been able to put together? And is there any thought?
The biggest number of actual machines I've had, I've sat through and done the math, with static routing tables, how much memory would it take to build this much of thing and that kind of stuff? And you can think about the CPU load of computing the open shortest path and all that kind of stuff. But the largest number of nodes I've had would be probably 7. So not a lot. It's hard to deploy this stuff, and it's expensive. I probably will have 10 or 20 nodes, real nodes in the outside with real-world issues within 6 months, maybe even a lot more. I've run into somebody who's interested in helping me with this and may, we may work together on it, and that could significantly increase the rate at which stuff gets deployed. It's really, for me, sort of an experimental network. It's a useful network that you can use right now, but it's really a question of, can you build one of these things? Does it really work? There's some people that say absolutely no, there's some people that say yes, and I decided I'd try it.
Another So more on the theoretical side of scalability. Can you imagine if you had people in a large geographic area all running software like this, what would the reachability be like from one side of a geographic area to another, or how far would you expect to have realistic reachability?
I think it should be reasonably good. The sort of the answer is it's pretty easy to intentionally, I mean, if you've got a large, since I see this as the network is individually owned by the people who use it, since there's no shared, there's no necessity for shared infrastructure, I see it as sort of like, in some ways, sort of the ultimate sort of community network, because each individual owns all the hardware that they use. And so if you find yourself in a situation where you really do have long multi-hop routes, like you're getting into the point where you need to go 10 hops to get to where you want to go a lot, it doesn't take a lot of a few people getting together and building some long-haul links to make it so the whole network becomes much smaller topologically. He could actually say more about that. But I know that it's not that hard to build some long-haul links. And you can even do that by, if you want to, getting a leased line between two different points in the network and routing over that. The other thing that we really wanted to show but is not working yet is using IP tunnels to pick an arbitrary point in the internet, whether it's NATed or not or whatever, to bring up IP tunnels to a central point, and using the IP tunnels as part of the topology of the network so that you don't have to have all contiguous stuff. And you make, so this is sort of how you can bring a nice mobile network without being an AS, how you can get multiple routing points off your network, and so a few people can get together, is you just find one machine that you can stick somewhere where bandwidth is really cheap at some colo or something like that, or in a closet at your work or something like that, if you have those kind of privileges. And then a whole bunch of people can bring tunnels in through their home broadband lines if they want to, and I'll terminate the tunnels there. And you can get, if you want, real IP addresses routed into that point. And now you can utilize all of those tunnels as well as the internal network topology to get to the internet or inside the network. And you just always pick what's cheapest. Totally depends on network topology. And you remember, it's not like the topology isn't just flat. You have all sorts of weird topologies where, these two people that are 5 miles away happen to have perfect line of sight, and so they have a really solid link, but nowhere else in between does. So I think the answer is really just, play with what you think are real topologies and look at how many hops, what's the average distance across the link with those topologies. So I think it's not too hard to bring up, a long-haul link with just wireless stuff as well as you want to, whether it's just, more 802.11 or 802.A with a couple of, directional high-gain antennas between two long-haul points to bring the network smaller and, fold it over. There's really a lot of choices that you have to do it, but it's really going to be a matter of the topology you can achieve. I mean, I can't really answer it more than that. If you can only achieve a flat neighbor topology, then, and each hop is a mile away, then, 10 miles is going to mean that you're, at 10 hops. But I think you can do better than that. Any other questions?
So I'm talking about the idealized cypherpunk network. Could you talk a bit more about the idea of incoming connections into this? Would you have sort of...
What you mean by that?
Well, you talked a little about having a centralized server where people would have tunnels into it. Would that enable... would you be able to wrap on top of your keys infrastructure an ability to, for instance, say, I want to speak to this particular computer. I don't know its IP address, but I do know it's key or whatever, and I do know that it's running via this server.
Yeah, you should be able to. If you don't know, you have to know its name,
right?
And so whether its name is its key or is its IP address, if its name is its key, there has to be a regular way for people not on the network for doing that mapping. So, you'd have to provide either through DNS or some new system. The way I would actually
The way I actually would do it is I'd want if you wanted to know by the key and not by some IP address how to get to them, is what you'd just do is you'd bring up an encrypted connection to this border box, and then talk the same protocol over it. I mean, you can also build this network if you want to as an overlay network on the existing internet, you know, without using wireless technology at all. So, I mean, if other people besides me start building them, I'm very interested in, you know, bringing tunnels between those two networks so that even if we're not geographically neighbored, we become one network. So I don't know if I really answered your question, but, I mean, if you know its name and you can map between a name and an IP address, then you can win.
There is one essential thing that wireless brings over wired network, and that is that wireless helps you not to be seen. And that is the fundamental issue here. I mean, you can, most of this thing you're doing, you can do, I mean, over a wired thing. But the new quality that wireless is bringing in is that since there is no wire, right? So nobody can
pull
trace
on the
you
cord
by the wire.
Long enough.
And I think there is a lot of development to be done in that area, just that this nice quality of not being seen. So you can do drive-by emailing and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. I've considered that. I thought about I could implement this network in a way where it had gave you hot, it intentionally tried to produce a lot of geographic anonymity. But I thought about it, you know, I looked at, you know, of everything I've looked at, you know, I think the only protocol that topologically does a really good job of that is like FreedomNet. And for a network where you want to move like packet data through and get like stuff done on, I thought about how you would implement that at this kind of level, and really my decision is it would kind of suck. So I sort of made a decision, well, this what I'm solving is already a hard problem, and I think I decided it would be better to just implement it this way, which does give you quite a bit of anonymity as it is. I mean, so, you know, somebody can look at the link state of the network and decide where you are topologically in the network, which has some relation to your geographic location, but, you know, I figured you could just, you know, once you had this kind of network, you could, if you really wanted that really high level anonymity, you could always add something on top of it to do that. I mean, although they're, you know, gone, you know, ZKS had their network, which seemed to work. You know, I ran a Freedom node for a while, and traffic went through it. I don't know if it was real people's traffic or not, but, you know. Yeah, I mean, you can always do that. You can always use a high gain directional antenna with some amplifiers, and if you're really worried, you know, you'll be illegal. But part of the problem too is, you know, they're going to go where you are topologically in the network, and then they're going to start looking for you if you've done something really bad. And it is, you know, direct sequence bed spectrum, but it's direct sequence bed spectrum with a fixed chip that's documented in the standard. So they're gonna find you. Like I said, I could have tried to implement a network that had high geographic anonymity in the protocol where you didn't know the link state of the network, you just knew your neighbors. And in the end, you know, I believe it would be hard. It's another hard problem on top of a hard problem, so I decided to put it off till later.
We got time for two more questions.
Okay. Send you back there. I mean, that's just another link to follow. I mean, everything is always just one more link to follow down until you find the source. Anybody else?
This is a repeat of the earlier question. Have you used unidirectional nodes ever?
Have I used unidirectional nodes ever? Yeah, I made it work once, but I didn't use it for very long. You know, if you look at this, I mean, the graph that's gone off the screen, like, I mean, it knows the unidirectional topology. It just chooses a lot of the time because it's got other links. And if you look at, there might be some in this one. I don't think there is at this snapshot, but occasionally there is unidirectional topology in the network. It's in the link state of the network. It's just not using unidirectional links. So, I mean, it groks it. I've just configured it to only use bidirectional links because, you know, it's just a problem I haven't chose to really debug yet. I mean, you know, thinking about it, that the ARP problem is going to be something that will have to be handled. To make myself easier on myself so I can test things without upgrading the whole network at a time, so far I haven't done anything where I had to change any of the wire protocol stuff, the packet formats. And I've sort of been building up enough things that I'm almost ready to do that. I've been kind of waiting until I have a big list so I can do it once and get a whole bunch of improvement and only upgrade these machines once, because I find it's actually interesting that people are really, really interested in this for a whole bunch of reasons, and it's very hard for me not to deploy faster than I really want to, because it's going to be, the more I deploy, the more it is a pain to fix things. So I'm actually not deploying as fast as I could as well. But that's another reason why not to. Last question? Okay, last question.
Have you ever thought about the application of this to some of the ad hoc peer-to-peer networks over standard links like Nutella and things?
I have thought about it as far as, if I was going to, I've thought about it as far as, as long as, you might as well run a border discovery protocol that feeds directly into them, right? Since, the really hard problem in these, overlay, peer-to-peer networks on the internet is, resource discovery and knowing where things are and who to talk to. Being like a physical thing, you have this neat property that you have like some interesting built-in thing. You can just send out a packet, and there are some people that will respond or not. With a mobile network, it's also very interesting too, because if you have mobile nodes moving through the network, they can propagate information through the network through you as well. A hack that I've been working on is, it's another project to do for this, is to build a HTTP proxy where you run a local HTTP proxy on your machine and an HTTP proxy on each border host that has a real connection to the internet. And so instead of having to haul this traffic through IP tunnels all the way back to one central point in the network, you have a protocol where your proxy knows about the border proxies and will pick a different one for each HTTP request that you make where you need a new socket. And then there's the interesting discovery problem in that. So what you can do is you just have your direct neighbors, do a local discovery protocol. And then as you have things and of course every time you talk to somebody, you exchange lists of what the network looks like. But then you have this cool thing that people with laptops now move these lists around the network. And so you can kind of spread information around by the fact that there's real physical objects that do have real borders and real neighbors and actually move around and meet new people, as opposed to the internet where you sit at one spot and you don't really have any neighbors because your only neighbor really is your ISP and they're very rarely running the interesting software you want to talk to. So, you're broadcasting over your link to them isn't very interesting. So you're basically isolated and you have to work much harder to do resource discovery in a way. You only get local resource discovery, but it's better than what you get with most things. So it's sort of an answer to your question. I guess my time is up and somebody else is up, I think. Is it Bram's up now? Who's up now? I don't remember.
No, we have the panel up now.
Oh, panel now.